Sandra sent me this poem earlier today by Mary Oliver. Don't hesitate. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give in to it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind, and much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything, but very likely you notice it at the instant when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. So, I don't know about you, but sometimes in, you know, attending to the daily news, I feel like the weight of the world is on my shoulders and in my heart. I think that that's just because we care. It's normal, it's not wrong, it's good, it's fine. We've made vows, many of us, to liberate all beings, to save all beings, to alleviate suffering in the world. So our hearts are touched. Many times we are moved to action. Often our actions don't produce any result that we can see. In our narrative minds. And so we can get discouraged, we can be disappointed, life can feel heavy. And sometimes that narrative can become quite strong. Now, as all of you know, I'm not a person to advocate trying to alter mind states in particular, to suddenly say, well, I choose to be happy. I think we are feeling as we feel and we just let that happen. That's our practice on the cushion. And often in exploring these sad, bewildered, frustrated, despairing places, we find that at the heart of it is love. And it's not really so bad. We learn we don't need to run away from our hearts. And there's our liberation. That's quite a remarkable kind of liberation. But we don't need to stick to our suffering or our pain or our longing either. Sometimes in the midst of difficult times, we might hear a little bird chirping outside. It might be so buoyant, it might just raise you up or bring a tear or make you smile. It can be something simple like the wind turning up the leaves and showing you their silver underside. We can let ourselves not know how everything is going to be in the future. Sometimes in these despairing places, it's because we're telling ourselves a story that things will always be terrible, that things are headed to doomsday, that there's no way out. And I understand sometimes the preponderance of evidence can look that way. But really, we don't know. And that not knowing opens up possibility. It opens the heart. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe a child's laughter as they're riding their tricycle around a driveway is enough to bring us enormous joy. And from the Lankavatara Sutra, I want to read a little bit. Being attached to names and images of all kinds, people are unaware that the characteristic of forms are the projections of their own minds. And they are unaware that neither pleasure nor pain lead to liberation. Desires simply produce more desires. So it's interesting how I think we can set up liberation as the positive thing, so it's got to come with pleasure. I mean, that's the story we probably most often tell. So what a wonderful coincidence that Mindy chose to read for our sutra service, Barry Magid's Ending the Pursuit of Happiness. When we really desire to be happy or joyful, then we're often at war with reality. In the moments when we aren't feeling that way, we think there's something missing, we think there's something wrong, it exacerbates our suffering. What a wonderful possibility to allow ourselves to be open to joy and pleasure when they are arising. But not to attach to them. And to be open to sorrow and disappointment when they are arising. Not to push them away and not to attach to them. This is a different kind of liberation, a kind of liberation that doesn't actually depend on the content of our mind. Nothing is permanent. Continuing with the sutra, grasping characteristics of the skandhas, they are unaware that these have no self. Only when they understand no self among beings will they attain liberation. Of course, we chant the five skandhas every time we read the Heart Sutra together. They're basically ways of naming aspects of the self, but each skandha contains all the others. So the one we often cite for the skandhas is form. But they point to ourself, and what's interesting is that the skandhas, we think that therefore if it's the self, that there's me over here and there's everything else out there. But the skandhas contain everything that exists. Everything. They manifest everything that exists. So what does it mean to say that there is no self? At this point, we've talked about that enough, sort of philosophically. I guess I just want to invite you to inquire. To sit with that as a koan, if you like, to wonder about it. Because the Dharma shares that when we realize that all things are empty, without fixed essence, interwoven, interdependent, that we are liberated. But my experience is that when I have a strong sense of self churning along. It's often related to some kind of attachment or aversion. Now, one might imagine, therefore, that we just have to get rid of all attachment and aversion. But I'd say these are relatively normal phenomena of a human mind. So for me, the practice isn't to try to get rid of anything, but simply to continue to notice and look deeply into whatever is, and allow impermanence, allow interdependence to reveal itself as our practice. The sutra goes on, yet neither should they attach to no self among persons. And if they should then conceive of liberation, they would fail to transcend. It is easy to get stuck on any Dharma point. The teaching of emptiness, the teaching of no self, these too can become reified concepts for us, and we can get a bit lost in them. We might find ourselves feeling like nothing matters if we get too attached to the no. And if we begin to conceive of what liberation is, if we turn it into a thing, then it will exclude other things. And by nature, we will find ourselves desiring it. So our task again is to notice what concepts are arising for us and to allow them to arise and allow them to pass. The sutra then says, dwell in the bliss of whatever is present. Dwell in the bliss of whatever is present. So we can see that this is really a practice. It's not an idea. It's what we do in our practice of meditation. We sit and we notice what's here now. If we're strategizing about bringing about particular results, we're going to get lost in all kinds of conceptual maps that just carry us away. But if we just practice paying attention, noticing what's here, opening to what's here, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable to whatever is here, the Dharma unfolds quite naturally. There's nothing we need to do to make it happen. Most of us, our practices are too busy. We're busy trying to make things happen. You don't need to make the world happen. You don't need to make things empty. You don't need to make impermanence. You don't need to create thusness. For me, this whatever is the key to this line. dwell in the bliss of whatever is present. You know, over the last 3 weeks or so, I've been smacked by depression, which has been interesting. I had an episode of depression when I was quite young, actually. Lasted about a year. And then based on a number of challenging life events in my early 40s, another stretch, that lasted about a year or so. And I started taking this medication recently. I've mentioned this to some of you before, that I was recently at this, surprisingly, because I'm a man and, you know, 54, so fairly young, was diagnosed with osteoporosis. So I took this, I'm taking this medication. And it, about a week after I started it, no other causes that I could discern anyway, I just, the weight of this, this sense of meaninglessness and despair and fatigue and grief, just constant grief, settled in like this heavy fog within me, around me. Everything was bad. The world was bad. Work was bad. So these are the moments, you know, that we practice for. We call it practice, right? And of course, practice is the end result. It is the fulfillment. It's also a kind of practice for what may come. And I was so grateful to our practice of just turning toward and letting things unfold in our tradition. Not needing to blame myself, or although that was interesting because, you know, mental formations just arise, so sometimes that would happen too. But the practice really for me was just letting it all be here, being with it, trying to sort of take compassionate care of what was arising in my heart. Crying when I needed to cry. But there's some way that our practice just informs us. I can't quite explain this because it's not really conceptual. You know, this idea of no self, this understanding, it's not a mental formation. It's a kind of seeing things as they are. Seeing that a thought formation has no fixed essence or reference. Just recognizing that it's passing through in some way. Seeing that a mood is just shape-shifting. That I can't hold on to it. I can't pin it down. Even something that's hitting me pretty hard. I can't explain what a relief that is. That even the difficult things seen exactly as they are don't feel quite so much like a problem. In case you're worried about, I don't know why, but 3 days ago it lifted. Maybe it'll come back, I don't know. But isn't that the way? Things coming and going. There's a wonderful koan, and Jia Jia describes himself as North Gate, South Gate, East Gate, West Gate. Everything just passing through. So I wanted to share, close with a poem, a final poem by Mary Oliver. It's called The Uses of Sorrow. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness, and it took me years to understand that this too was a gift. One more, sorry, Mary Oliver. This one's worth it. I love that one too. This one's called Perhaps. No, this one's called In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds, and every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes, to let it go. To let it go.